As I understand it, this book started as an article for Southern Living. At what point did you know this was more than just an article?
I think it wasn't until we got the letters from readers and they told us what it meant to them. A lot of them said, this is the first time in 30 years of reading the magazine that I've cried over Southern Living. A lot of them said, me too. I saw this happen in my own neighborhood. And many of them said, this made me proud to be Southern. And that's when I started thinking, you know, this is our Katrina. This really needs to be told.
So how did you go about telling that?
My goodness, where to start? I had a year to report and write the book. And I started by looking at the magnitude of the tornado outbreak itself, which was the biggest outbreak in the history of recorded weather, by a narrow margin over a 1974 outbreak that also affected Alabama. I really started by looking at children's books about meteorology to understand the very basics of tornadoes. And then from there, I graduated to textbooks and a lot of interviews with meteorologists. And I wanted to wrap my head around the magnitude of the storm because it was so complex that I don't think any of us, myself included, really appreciated how big it really was. Most people remember the Tuscaloosa EF4 because it hit the city, the home of the Crimson Tide, and yet it was so much bigger than that. That was one of 62 tornadoes that hit Alabama in one day, and that one day was part of a three-day outbreak that affected 21 states from Texas to Canada. It was just massive.
And even though the book is made up of largely personal stories, personal tales, you started with the science, you started with the facts.
Right. I wanted to understand the event, and then I wanted to tell it through the people who lived it. I really wanted it to be literary nonfiction where it reads like a novel, but it's all based on reported fact.
Well, the book does focus primarily on ABC 3340 meteorologist James Spann. You also focus largely on three University of Alabama students. How did you pick those particular people? I'm thinking particularly about the students because you had an outbreak around the state. How did you focus on the people you did focus on?
Well, it was challenging. First, I looked at all of the tornadoes in all of the towns and tried to get a sense of what happened where. And then I wanted to actually look at two towns, a big city and a small town, because the way they were able to respond was very different. Tuscaloosa is the one that everyone remembers, and it was my college town twice. So I felt like I had to go there. And then Cordova happened almost simultaneously, and that was a small town where they had a volunteer fire department. Tuscaloosa had a professional fire department and many more resources. So I thought it was important to tell the small town story as well. When I started looking at Tuscaloosa, I looked at the whole list of people who died, and I wanted something where it was more than one person under a roof. And there were actually two houses and of three students, and I looked at both of them, and I approached both of them. And the doors just seemed to open with the first family in this particular house that I went to, and I feel like I should say how I approached them. I didn't want to just cold call them and set them back on their heels because I know how jarring that can be. So I looked on Facebook and tried to see, do we have any friends in common? And it turns out that the cousin of one of the girls I wanted to write about went to my high school in Florida. So I reached out to her on Facebook and said, hey, you know, here's who I am. This is what I want to do. Could we have a conversation? And then based on that, I'd like to know if you think that, you know, you could approach them for me and set up a meeting.
Well, as you said, this is literary nonfiction. This isn't quite like a newspaper account. How did you go about recreating that day or the time around that day, April 27, 2011? I'm thinking particularly about the thoughts and conversations that you recount among those University of Alabama students.
Right. Well, there are a whole lot of recorded verbatim timestamp sources available today that weren't available even 10 years ago. I started out by transcribing James Spann's entire day of broadcast. He does wall-to-wall coverage, no commercials, and I transcribed it and put little time markers. So that gave me a timeline of the event as it was unfolding, and it gave me a sense of what we knew at any given moment. I wanted you as the reader only to know what the characters at that moment knew and nothing more. On top of that, I looked at social media posts. So the families of several victims friended me from their victim's Facebook page, and they also shared with me text conversations recovered from their phones. And between these two things, I felt like I was able to really get verbatim dialogue that was timestamped and that reflected what they were thinking at a very specific moment in time. And this was useful because when I layered that on top of James Spann's transcript, if they said, oh my gosh, look at that thing, they had said that they were watching ABC 3340, and I could look at the time they said it and know what was on TV at that given moment. So that was really useful. It also gave an insight into what they were thinking, and that's really hard to do when you're writing about people who are no longer around to be interviewed. So whenever I say that someone is thinking something or express their inner thoughts like a novelist would, that's not made up. That comes from either a social media post or a text or something that they said they were thinking to a primary source that was able to recount it to me.
From reading it, and I don't say this to be flip, but we kind of know how it ends. We may have memories of our own. We may remember some of the names that are mentioned in the book. You know, did that play into your thinking at all when you wrote the book, knowing that you didn't have that ability to withhold the ending to keep the suspense?
Yes, it did. However, I do think that even people who know the event fairly well, the students that I wrote about weren't widely written about at the time. There were others who really were the face of the storm. But if you don't know who they are, you don't necessarily know how it ends. And even people who know how it ends told me, oh my gosh, even though I knew what was going to happen, I still kept hoping something different would happen. I wanted to write it in such a way that the characters who did not survive to be interviewed were just as three-dimensional and believable as the ones who did survive to be interviewed. And that was hard to do because I wanted you to really get to know them and care about them so that when something did happen, you were devastated and you felt a small iota of what the families felt. And hopefully those characters will embed themselves in your psyche so that when the weather turns, they tap you on the shoulder and say, get to a safe place, and you remember them.
Well, you paint some very intimate portraits of these people. You worked with the families to gather material to write mm-hmm. that. You know, have you had a chance to get reaction from the families whose loved ones are written about in the book?
I did. And in fact, one of the things that I did to fact check this that I don't think a lot of journalists do is I sat down with each of the families and had a private reading where I read aloud every chapter in which their loved one appeared. And I did it for a couple of reasons. You know, one, I wanted to make sure I didn't have any little errors in there. Second, I wanted to make sure that I didn't, I guess, project my own feelings or emotions and that I portrayed what they had shared with me in interviews correctly, that I didn't take any liberties with what they said or felt. And third, I wanted to expose them for the emotion of this and how that might actually affect other people who might then come and approach them. And I wanted to make sure the first time they experienced it was with me and not alone in a room. And we cried together. We cried the ugly cry. And it was really good for both of us. And it was closure, I think, in this big, long, really difficult process.
Well, you've been on book tour promoting this book. What have you heard from people, particularly people not in Alabama?
I was curious how people who didn't have experience with this storm would react. Almost everyone in Alabama, as you know, either has a first-person experience with the storm or is one degree of separation from it. But I wondered how people who didn't live here, who didn't really know what the storm was, I wondered if they would feel it. And they did. People who had nothing to do with this, who don't even understand tornadoes, said that they cried and they mourned with us, but then they also felt uplifted, as so many of us felt when everyone kind of came together after the storm and helped each other.
You had a little bit of concern about people having reservations about reading the book.
Yes, a lot of people who had a personal experience with this storm were a little nervous to read it because they know it's going to be painful, and it is. But I will say this is not a book about tornadoes. This is a book about people. It's a book about resilience and the power of people to weather the unthinkable and lift each other up.
Well, it is the 4th anniversary of the storm this month. What are your thoughts on this anniversary?
You know, it's interesting. In Tuscaloosa, we're now entering the generation of students who have no memory of the storm because everyone who was a freshman has now graduated. And I think it's really important for incoming freshmen to know what has happened in this town, that what took place. I also think that people are now a little bit more able to talk about it. For a long time, for at least 2 years, I think people were not ready to talk about it. It was still too fresh and too painful. And one of the ways that I want to commemorate the storm and also bring people together for kind of a collective moment of focusing on the beautiful things that came from our brokenness is to put on a fundraiser that is actually going to be hosted on April 30th at one of the places that wouldn't have existed had the storm not happened. Alberta Elementary School was blown away by the tornado. Luckily, school was out, no kids were there. But it was demolished and the kids had to go to other schools. Well, what has been built in its place is the Alberta School of Performing Arts. And it is a magnet school that has an innovative new curriculum. It has state-of-the-art buildings, a new auditorium with a stage, music rooms. And it's one of the examples of things that wouldn't have existed had the storm not happened. And it's really important to look through the lens of the beautiful things that did come from our brokenness, the good things that happened that would not have happened had it not been for the bad things. And that's a great outlook on life and kind of the message of this book.